It's an honor to be here with you, especially in light of the very important topic we're discussing. One thing that many people don't realize is this massive migration and displacement process has been happening over decades, if not centuries. The Middle East, 30 years ago, boasted a 25% Christian presence. Now it's 5%. And however you look at it, whether it's an advantage or a disadvantage, but 80 of those 5% inhabitants are actually in Egypt. So if you look at the general presence of the Middle East, excluding Egypt, it is possibly about 1 to 2%. And that's because there has been an unfolding dynamic over those decades, and because it's only really come on our radars now because of the sheer scale of what we're seeing, and because it really is something that is on our borders, very literally. We should not have waited until the Christian population of Mosul was entirely displaced, nor should we have waited when extremist and terrorist organizations decide who does and does not have a right to live where and under what conditions. So it's important for us to continue to look at the concept within its own context. Christians of the Middle East are those who are part of those communities and have been for two millennia, being members of Christian communities that were in the birthplace of Christianity. They have a significant presence, and they actually have a significant sense of national identity and dignity. And they don't want to leave those areas. They don't want to leave. But they leave because of the immense pressures and challenges that they face daily. And when they get to the point of being actual challenges to their lives and the lives of their families, that is when we suddenly see this transition and this movement. They are going to places where they feel that they can provide for their families in a sense of dignity, prosperity, and safety. One particular example, let's say in Egypt, and Egypt is by far, far in a much better position than most of the Middle East as far as Christians are concerned. And Christian-Muslim relations there are better than in many other places. But it cannot be denied that over the past decades there has been a systematic persecution that has meant that there is limited, if any, access to prominent positions within the community, of people moving internally within their jobs, of people prospering. And so what happens is, even in that context, people either go into the private sector or they leave. So if you couple that along with a real and viable and legitimate risk to life, then of course people are going to leave. Having visited Erbil earlier this year with Aid to the Church in Need, and then more recently the Greek-Macedonian border with Church Together in Britain and Ireland, and General Secretary Bob Fyfe, who was there, and my brother Bishop David Hamid, Bishop in Europe, we were able to see on the ground in Greece and earlier in Erbil what people are going through. When we speak about economic migrants, we must realize these are not people who are moving from one leafy suburb to a leafier suburb, not from one socioeconomic setting to a better one. These are people who are leaving war-torn, near anarchic states where there is no protection for their lives to a place where they feel safety. Having said that, the way they reach this relative safety is by going onto what they call death boats, along with their families, and subjecting themselves and those families to what they consider a lesser risk than they face if they stay. So whether we're going to speak about migrants or refugees, all that is really semantics. What we are speaking about are people who are vulnerable and who are looking to share in the same right in life, safety, prosperity, and dignity that we all have on a daily basis. What sort of life is there going to be for someone who is a professional, who has left his or her all possessions back in Syria or in Iraq, and is coming here? Are they coming for a more prosperous life compared to their own prosperity? No. They're coming to a relatively more prosperous life than being in a country that is now devastated and crippled by a war that has lasted for years. And that's what we're trying to do, and that's who we should be welcoming. Not welcoming people who we see as presenting a risk economically, but embracing people who are vulnerable and are looking for a way of living the basics that we take for granted. Of course, there are security risks, and that's why I very much support the British government's proposal to take people from source so they can be vetted. We can take the most vulnerable, and then we can bring them into our communities and welcome them. Of course, the number must be increased, and we, along with Bishop Jonathan through the Church of Refugee Network and many other organizations, are trying to increase those numbers. But first of all, encouraging government that we will support them at this first point, but then seeing what we can do to further this. We've started looking at logistics so much and how to welcome people here and forgotten the real problem. The problem is they're leaving their homes. And as we come into Advent and as we look forward to the Nativity and the Feast of the Incarnation in the Christian calendar, we've got to mark that the Incarnation, the visiting of God to humanity in flesh, to man, was not only to make us comfortable here where we ourselves are in exile, in this world, but to provide a safe and viable and legitimate means back to the kingdom. So when we're looking at people who are now in exile, seeking refuge, we should not only be looking at what to provide for them immediately, but long term, how do they go back to their own lands? Because given the opportunity, I would be very confident in saying that the vast majority would want to go back to their lands of their native heritage. And so, as we support government and as we encourage government, we also need to say that the short term is essential now because it is the life and death situation. But in terms of taking in refugees, how many will we take? What is the magic number? 20,000, 50,000, 100,000? Germany has taken in 1.5 million. Depending on which statistics you follow, there are approximately 12 million displaced peoples in Syria. And what about the rest of the Middle East? Where will they all be absorbed? The problem is not how we welcome people here alone. The issue is how we welcome people who are coming now. But how do we provide for them as they want to go back and as we live that same message of incarnation, living in the here and now and sharing their pain, but also providing a safe and viable and legitimate way back to where they belong. We're also discussing climate change here, and the scriptures tell us that we have been placed as a safeguard to God's humanity, to God's creation. We have been entrusted with that creation. And of course, we know that people are not just fleeing war-torn countries, but also fleeing places where there is famine, there is drought. And much of that, according to what we've read and seen and experienced, is because we haven't taken our stewardship seriously. In Genesis 1:26, we're told that God, when he spoke to Adam, gave him dominion. And so we have that dominion. John 10:10 speaks of our Lord, Jesus Christ, coming into the world that we as humanity may have life and have it more abundantly. And that, I say to you, sisters and brothers, today is our challenge. Our challenge for those fleeing their lands, for those living in exile, as we all live in exile in this world, is to first feel their presence. Secondly, we go to them and embrace them. Thirdly, that they may have life and prosperity and safety now. But fourthly, and more importantly in my mind, is that in the long term, that we can serve so many by providing their immediate, but also their long-term need and desire and hope that they are repatriated to their places of origin, their countries of heritage, and into a place in the world where they have not only contributed, but they will continue to contribute as a reconciling force and as a powerful presence and as witness and as light in darkness.